Hello, I am Bob Vessels and I am from the Netherlands. In my podcast, Rembrandt's Money, I will be telling you unexpected stories about Rembrandt, the famous Dutch painter. Compelling and fascinating stories. Hardly about art, no, about his almost unknown life as an entrepreneur, about Rembrandt's business, his finances and his legal affairs. In 2024, I am planning 24 podcast episodes, so around every 14 days. Every episode is between some 15 to 25 minutes, and all for free. If you want to know more, please visit my website www.rembrandtsmoney.com. Welcome, or welcome back again. Today we unravel the mysteries of art, money, and the puzzling relationship between Rembrandt and the art dealer Hendrik Uilenburg. Uilenburg was a merchant and an art dealer. Was Rembrandt just employed by him? Or did they establish a firm or a partnership? Did Rembrandt become a member of the Amsterdam's St. Luke's Guild? And if so, when? Who was this Uilenburg anyway? Imagine. In around 1631, Rembrandt arrives in Amsterdam and he finds work for himself in the workshop of art dealer Hendrik Uilenburg. They're sharing lodgings with him on the iconic Breestraat or Broad Street. Now, let's delve into Uilenburg's intriguing background. He was born in Friesland in the northern part of the Netherlands. He and his brother Rombout became painters for the Polish court. Interestingly, their uncle Rombertus Uilenburg was a mayor in Leeuwarden and the father of Rembrandt's future bride, Saskia. In the second half of the 16th century, the parents of Hendrik and Rombout moved to Krakow. I think in English it is Krakow. Here, his father became a furniture maker at the court of the King of Poland. After some two decades in Poland, Hendrik settled in Amsterdam in 1625. He was about 40 years old. He was part of a large flow of migrants to the Republic, especially to Amsterdam. It is assumed that his integration into the Amsterdam society would have gone quite smoothly. After all, both he and his wife Maria had Dutch roots. They had family in nearby cities such as Leiden and Weesp. Hendrik and Maria had a large family with 14 children in total. They lived on the Breestraat in a house on the corner of the Zwanenburg Wall. When did Uilenburg and Rembrandt meet? The first evidence of contact between the two dates from 20 June 1631. Rembrandt lends 1,000 guilders to Uilenburg. The notary writes that Rembrandt is living in Leiden. The lender is Hendrik Uilenburg, according to the notary, art dealer. 1,000 guilders was a considerable amount of money at that time. Dutch artists then earned an average annual net income of between 1,100 and 1,400 guilders. Three times as much as a master carpenter and more than other highly skilled professionals. An ordinary professional earned about 300 to 350 guilders a year. Uilenburg and Rembrandt may have met already 3 years earlier in Leiden. In 1628, 3 years before the loan, Uilenburg visited Leiden. Rembrandt was already for a few years working as a young independent master in his own art studio. On 8 March 1628, Hendrik was present at the offices of a civil law notary in Leiden. He was there to represent the widow of his brother Rombout. He acted as her representative in a disagreement about the ownership of certain paintings belonging to the widow and her children. Hendrik, certainly an art dealer with a flair for business, may have visited Rembrandt's art studio at the same time. Perhaps he painted Rembrandt a rosy commercial picture about joining his workshop and his academy in Amsterdam. You understand that I'm thinking out loud. There is no written evidence to support all this. Back to the loan. Hendrik's declaration of the debt to Rembrandt was recorded in a notarial deed. That deed included a clause saying if Rembrandt wanted to be repaid within a year, he had to inform Hendrik 3 months in advance. 5% interest was paid annually. Two witnesses signed the deed. Strauss and Vandermeulen, in their compilation of 1979 called the Rembrandt Documents, assume that Rembrandt contributed this considerable amount in kind, with paintings and not in cash, possibly as an investment in Hendrik's growing business in paintings. Indeed, for a young painter, Rembrandt was 25 at the time, 1,000 guilders was a major financial investment. After all, Rembrandt's early professional life lasted 6 years in another city in Leiden, with only a few paying pupils. Evidently, again here, there is no proof of Rembrandt paying in kind. The source of Rembrandt's money is uncertain. Some say that Rembrandt at that time was apparently already prosperous. This does not seem very likely to me given the course of his business in Leiden. Others point out that Rembrandt was only at the beginning of his career. I think that it is also possibly that some money had come to him when his father passed away a year before. The lawyer in me wonders, was this a loan? Do you want to know more? I tell you more about it in my blog, Rembrandt's Money 24004, on the website rembrandtsmoney.com. 1,000 guilders could have been a contribution in capital brought into a firm or a partnership against Hendrik's non-cash contribution in work and diligence, or as the Dutch say, in arbeid en vlijt. The latter possibility is the view of Vogelaar, who is the former curator of the Leiden Lakenhal Museum. He suggests the existence of a firm, I quote, as a kind of art company in a modern way, with Uilenburg running the business and garnering commissions, while Rembrandt produced paintings. On 20 June 1631, Vogelaar writes, Rembrandt himself invested no less than 1,000 guilders in the company and, a little later, set up a workshop at Uilenburg's home. End of quote. Be that as it is, also here, the notarial document leaves the reader in doubt. This brings us to the core question that has occupied art historians for many decades and which has kept them deeply divided. Did Rembrandt find work as a portrait painter in Amsterdam in 1631, or did he set up his first workshop there? Setting up his workshop would mean then continuing his independent entrepreneurship, which started around 6-7 years earlier in Leiden. Nadler has most recently claimed that in January 1632, Rembrandt was employed full-time by Eilenburg, and that he also managed a studio where a company of artists copied paintings and painted new works. I quote, "It was Rembrandt's job to act as head of the studio to monitor the execution of the assignments that Eilenburg received," end of quote. Canadian professor Dickey talks about Eilenburg as his Amsterdam employer, and Bicker writes about managing the busy shop of Eilenburg, as well as expanding its sales market. When did Rembrandt arrive in Amsterdam? Experts have said it could have been 1630 and 1631. You remember the loan agreement is of June 1631, but also 1632 and 1633. Again here, a notarial document is helpful. This time it is July 1632. Pieter Huygen de Bois, living outside Leiden, requested an Amsterdam notary on July 16, 1632, to draw up a notarial deed. The notary went to the home of Eilenburg on the Breestraat. A certificate was required for a tontine. A what? A tontine. A tontine can have several meanings. Generally, it is a form of a lottery, mixed with elements of an insurance contract. It was a rather common phenomenon in the 17th century in Holland. Such a tontine could be an investment plan for raising capital, for which each subscriber paid an agreed sum into a fund and thereafter received an annuity. As the members died, their shares devolved to the other participants. The Dutch would call it an aanwasbidding, and in this way, the value of each annuity increased. On the death of its last member, the fund was wound up. The tontine in question concerned 100 persons established as being alive and arranging that they would still be alive 1 year later. The civil law notary had to establish the status, dead or alive, of many persons. If Rembrandt had died, the circle of possible title holders would have become smaller. The notary knocks on the door and asks whether Mr. Rembrandt Harmanszoon van Rijn was present. In his legal language, he refers to Rembrandt, painter, lodging in the house of Eilenburg. After having established that Rembrandt was indeed present, the notary stated in the deed that it appeared to me, the notary, that he, Rembrandt, still looked fresh, vigorous and in good health, which is in Dutch, dat mij bleek dat hij was nog fris, kloek en de wel te pas. To this conclusion, Rembrandt responded, I quote, "That is true. I am, thank God, in good condition and in good health." In Dutch, dat is waar. Ik ben Godlof in goede dispositie en de wel te pas. Here we witness a unique moment in Rembrandt history. As far as I can tell, these are the only words spoken by Rembrandt that were recorded by a third party during his entire life. When did Rembrandt leave Eilenburg's house? For that answer, please consult my blog 24004 on the website of rembrandtsmoney.com. Because Rembrandt had lived and worked in the city for more than 2 years, he can become a porter or a citizen of the city of Amsterdam. A porter is a full citizen that has acquired the right to live within the legal territorial circle of the city. In this way, Rembrandt gained access to significant legal and social privileges. As a result, Rembrandt could become a member of the Guild of St. Luke, could work as an independent master in Amsterdam, was allowed to train new novice painters, and he could sell the work he made on the Amsterdam market. In 1634, Rembrandt possessed a funeral medal, or a funeral token, begrafenispenning in Dutch, of the Guild of St. Luke. This was a minted brass medallion. It was engraved with recto escutcheon. It had three blank shields, which are the customary arms of the Guild of St. Luke. It also carried the date 1634, Rembrandt/Hermans/S, a capital S. And the capital S stands for the Dutch word schilder, painter. The Guild of St. Luke in Amsterdam was formally established in 1579. Its members included a wide range of glass cutters, sculptors, painters, glass writers, goldsmiths, box or crate makers, printers, bookbinders, sellers, schoolmasters, playing card makers, as well as print dealers and, as I said, painters. From 1621 onwards, persons who were not a member of the guild were forbidden to sell their works in Amsterdam, except through an art dealer. There is debate about what the date 1634 on the funeral medal means. It is either the date of that the medal was released, or is it the year that a member would join the guild? According to the information in Corpus Rembrandt, the date 1634 is proof that Rembrandt was a member of the Guild of St. Luke in that year. Only registered citizens of Amsterdam were eligible for this guild membership. Therefore, the last indication seems correct. Why would you pay the mandatory 50 guilders to become such a porter or citizen? Rembrandt was a painter for 10 years and was mature enough to act as an independent master in Amsterdam. His skill were developed and financially he seemed quite prosperous. Evidently, he wanted to sell his work as an independent artist on the Amsterdam market, but that he could have done also through an art dealer. Perhaps he was also thinking about his personal future. After all, he wanted to get married in 1364, and perhaps he wanted to secure the position of a future son as a guild member in order to obtain certain privileges. Children of members of the Guild of St. Luke were welcome in the Amsterdam orphanage when their parents died. An advantage at a time with serious plague epidemics? Or was Rembrandt thinking about family planning? After all, he married Saskia Uilenburg in the same year. Curious to note that the famous painter Rembrandt was also and already thinking about family planning. That's it for this time. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Would you like to know more about this story? There's an extended version of it on my website, rembrandtsmoney.com. And as an addendum to this podcast, you can find a blog titled Uilenburg's Art Studio. In the next episode, I will tell you about an even more older guild the Amsterdam Surgeons Guild, founded in 1552. I am referring to the autonomy lesson of Dr. Tulp, painted in 1632. Where is the autonomy lesson about? Where was it painted? Who is Dr. Tulp? What was his position in the society anyway? Yet another compelling and fascinating story of Rembrandt.